Preparing for Closing. This is Brock.
And this is John.
So what are the steps to prepare in advance of a closing?
Well, you really start preparing for the closing the first day you begin working on the deal. Closing is where everything comes together and the deal actually happens, and a big part of the due diligence process is identifying the things that need to be addressed in order for that to happen, in order to close the transaction. What needs to get transferred, what governmental filings or approvals have to be obtained, what corporate authorizations need to be made, third-party consents, et cetera. There's often a section, if you're doing an acquisition of the purchase agreement, that might specify the deliveries that are going to be made at the closing, and sometimes it's pretty granular. In other settings, usually public company deals, there may be fewer deliveries, and a lot of times there's going to just be officer certificates, et cetera, saying that you've complied with all your obligations and the reps and warranties are true at the closing. But even if the agreement is pretty granular about the conditions and the deliveries at closing, it only brushes the surface of all the paperwork that needs to get done in order to close the deal. That's why there's usually a document that's called a closing memo that gets circulated well in advance of the closing and really tries to lay everything out that needs to get done in order to close the deal.
And what's a pre-closing?
A pre-closing is a meeting that takes place before the closing date in order to make sure that everybody's got their act together, that everything that's needed to close the deal has been prepared, has been obtained, or is in the process and will be obtained by the closing date, and you know from who it's coming and that it's coming by that particular time. In another podcast, we talk about how long a closing takes, and in many instances, this pre-closing will continue right up to the closing date. It's important to keep in mind when you think of an M&A closing, you may actually be closing several different kinds of transactions. You may be closing on the acquisition while at the same time closing on a bank loan, a sub-debt financing, an equity drawdown from fund investors, if you've got a private equity fund involved in the transaction. There can be all sorts of moving parts that need to get addressed, and that is something that it doesn't sort of magically happen. Everyone has to, as you said, we start from the beginning and start working toward it, and the pre-closing is where you basically lay everything out on a table, either in cyberspace or in a physical room, it used to be in the old days, and make sure that if there's a delivery specified, there's a piece of paper that corresponds to it that's sitting there on the table.
And how do closings for various types of deal differ from each other?
Well, some are very simple. It doesn't get much easier than an underwritten public offering of equity. There are receipts, officer certificates, wire transfer instructions, instructions to DTC, closing opinions that have been previously negotiated. There's a ton of work in these deals, but it's really funny with all the work that you do in a public offering, particularly an initial public offering, you get to the closing and it's really anticlimactic. Public company stock-for-stock mergers are usually fairly simple, too. Any deal that you need financing to do, though, is going to be more complicated because of things like the need to pay off existing lenders, get lien releases, work out subordination agreements with sub-debt holders or sellers if there's a seller paper component to the deal, get security documents on file, et cetera. Asset deals can be very paper-intensive, particularly if you've got assets that are titled that need to be transferred. You've got to prepare appropriate transfer documentation. Sometimes you have to make sure that gets recorded. If you're buying real estate, there's a whole other bunch of paperwork and public filings. If you're doing a merger, you also have to coordinate filing the certificates of merger in appropriate jurisdictions and getting confirmation of effectiveness, which is usually pretty seamless in Delaware, but often far from that process in other jurisdictions. Site agreements and other arrangements also have to be addressed, new employment agreements, cashing out existing equity awards, terminating 401k plans, et cetera. In private deals, there's also often an escrow agreement and a requirement to fund that with a portion of the purchase price. So there can be a lot of moving parts that you have to address, and these typically will be addressed in advance, but you know, you're still sometimes crossing some T's and dotting some I's as you reach the closing table, and that can make things a little more extended in terms of the time frame.
And who's in charge of all this? Who's in charge of keeping track that the checklists are being checked off?
Yeah, usually the lawyer who is running the deal for the buyer will typically delegate that to a senior associate, and that person's going to coordinate the preparation of the closing memo and work with the other lawyers, paralegals, and the business people on the team, and on the other side as well, to figure out what needs to happen. And ideally, this is a process that gets going very early on in the transaction, sometimes well before the purchase agreement is signed. In most deals, there's going to be a period of time between signing and closing. maybe you need shareholder approval. Maybe there is a Hart-Scott antitrust filing or other regulatory approvals or third-party consents that need to be obtained. So that's built into the documentation in many areas of the agreement. But in smaller deals, sometimes you'll have a simultaneous sign and close. So in these, you're identifying and preparing everything you need to close the deal at the same time that you're negotiating the deal.
And what about closing opinions? Who's responsible for ginning those up?
Well, it's the law firm or the internal counsel who'll be rendering the particular opinions. But again, not every deal has a closing opinion. I think that's one of the things that people need to realize. Some deals are conditioned upon receiving legal opinions that cover various aspects of the transaction. These are customary in public offerings and in bank financings. And you sometimes still see them in mergers and acquisitions, although much less frequently than you used to. When I started, they were in almost every deal, it seemed. When you have a bank involved that they're lending into a deal, they will typically look for an opinion from borrower's counsel that's going to address things like the authorization of the agreement, its enforceability, their security interests, et cetera. One area where you frequently see an opinion requirement is if you're doing a tax-free deal where there are specific tax aspects of the deal that that matter. Sometimes you'll see the deal being conditioned on an opinion that it qualifies for the desired tax treatment. Now, there have been some high-profile litigation over these kind of tax opinion conditions in Delaware in the past year. I think you and I have both blogged about the Williams Company case. And so people are kind of rethinking their approach to these opinions in many cases. It's not necessarily only lawyers will be giving opinions either. If you've got public offerings and Rule 144A deals, you may also see the accountants for the issuer delivering comfort letters to the underwriters or the initial purchasers in those deals. And these are usually delivered at the time you sign up the underwriting agreement, but there's a bring-down letter that's issued at the time of the closing. So a lot of times when people are delivering opinions at closing, it's not necessarily just the lawyers who are signing on the dotted line.
Great stuff. Thanks very much.
You're welcome.